This episode of The Drunken Odyssey is brought to you by Scribophile, an online community with thousands of serious writers working in every conceivable genre. If you're eager to improve your own work and network with others, Scribophile is for you. Scribophile has educational tutorials, exciting forums, and most importantly, the ability to exchange in-depth critiques with other writers, using a karma system that keeps the exchange fair and equal. What is most exciting to me is that Scribophile allows writers to critique novel chapters, which is not something a writer can be guaranteed to experience in an MFA program. A basic account is free and grants you all the features, but upgrading to a premium account allows you to gain access to posting numerous works at once, requires no additional karma points to enter contests and other special features for only $9 a month or $65 a year. That's a lot less than a Netflix subscription. Listeners of The Drunken Odyssey will receive a 20% discount on top of those already low rates. Check out this week's show notes for details.
Welcome to The Drunken Odyssey with John King, a podcast about the writing life.
Tell us, oh muse, about a man whose mind and career has careened far and wide and upside down, whose computers are seared with crimes against grammar, whose typographical aggressions are legion, whose words flow into the very mouth of time, and more than a few bottles. A man who actually owns a typewriter, and perhaps even a soul.
And now, your host, John King.
Welcome, my friends, to episode 444 of the World's Greatest Writing Podcast. Happy Halloween, everybody. On today's show, Jeff Schuster and I conclude this year's installments of TDO versus The Curator of Schlock, this time about Jordan Peele's 2019 film, Us. The films that Jeff and I decided on for this series of dialogues aren't necessarily based on absolute quality, but rather what movies we thought would be fun to talk about. Though you should assume that we find some assured quality in the films we picked, and we picked two with Nicolas Cage. So due to COVID-19, I am blocked from going into Walt Disney World's The Haunted Mansion, and I can't really watch the movie inspired by The Haunted Mansion because it should be scary and not just depressing. These singing busts from the graveyard of the Haunted Mansion make an appearance in the 2003 movie with Eddie Murphy, and that's the best part. So I'll save you the hour and a half it takes to watch this movie and just leave you with the best part right here.
By the light
of the silvery moon, of the silvery moon.
Yeah, look, you sound really good. Your harmony's tight, but we're trying to find my wife, right? I gotta help my wife. Now, she'll be
coming round the mountain when she comes. When she comes, she'll be coming round the mountain when she comes.
Listen, guys, I'm trying to find a key. I'm trying to find a key.
Where's the key? Where's the key? Where's the beautiful key? Find the key, find the key. Oh, how happy you'll be.
The key that I'm trying to find is in the mausoleum. The key is in the mausoleum.
You left your key in a mausoleum down in Dixie.
Dad, there it is.
Okay, so I still have student work I need to grade, so let's get to the conversation.
And now, for something that is not the last thing we just did.
Jeff, welcome back to The Drunken Odyssey versus The Curator of Schlock. Since we've had to reschedule twice because of my sad ass, I think we're tied.
Yes.
Does that sound about right? I really don't have any rules about how we compete.
Well, I was a little late today, so we're even. I was 5 minutes late. Okay.
So this month we've been discussing horror films of the last decade, and I'm really happy with the movies that we've picked. We cheat a little bit by dipping into other movies that might be, you know, like tangentially related. We fall down the rabbit hole a little bit. We're going to try not to fall down the rabbit hole, especially since in Us, the rabbits are already down underground.
Anyway. Yes. I had an interesting tidbit. Apparently, Jordan Peele voiced the sounds of the wounded deer in Get Out, and also voiced the dying rabbit in Us, which I'm curious about now. But
yeah, so our film for today is Us from 2019. Oh. Jordan Peele is maybe the most interesting horror filmmaker these days.
Mm-hmm.
Also, my habit of trying to chart what's happening in the story. And we've kind of been pleasantly surprised at how movies start at around minute 20, because the movies that we've chosen, they just seem to lock into the characters more. And Jordan Peele's movies, I'm not sure there is a conventional way to chart what they're doing, which is pretty amazing considering how well written they seem.
Mm-hmm. I find it interesting that we had just covered Color Out of Space, which was about a family encountering terror. And this is also about a family encountering terror.
And we have two nerdy dads who are still like on the right side of lovable, even though like if that was my dad either, like, okay, yeah, it's annoying. Oh God, make him stop.
you don't need the internet. You have the outer net. Yeah, no, I like that one.
Yeah. So, had you seen these movies before? I know the curator of Schlock, right? Your sort of comfort food is kind of the 70s and the 80s.
I hadn't seen these movies yet. Everyone was talking. These are the two movies, too, I'll be honest with you. People try talking to you about them and you haven't seen them. We run into that. And I can't believe this happened. Like, I haven't seen it. Don't talk to me about it, please. It's like...
if you have been waiting, dear listener, to experience either of these movies, like, there's no spoiler-free way to talk about them in a meaningful way. So
no.
Hit pause, catch up, and then maybe play the podcast later.
Just go see them. I mean, they've been out a couple years now, so I guess there's not much of an excuse at this point. I finally got around to watching them, though. It's funny because I remember Get Out came, and I think I had that confused with Don't Breathe, and I realized, oh, no, wait a minute, that's a different movie.
Yeah.
Because I guess the two words, one syllable, giving you the command.
Yeah.
I think they're both Blumhouse movies, too. Yeah, so Blumhouse Productions.
Get Out has two syllables. Us has one. I'm not sure. Maybe an underscore will be the name of Jordan Peele's third horror film.
I don't know. That doesn't sound right. I don't know. I'm curious what he's going to follow these up with, but I guess nobody's filming right now at the moment. Maybe it'll touch on current fears going on today, which I guess are numerous, but
right. Well, his project after that was another reboot of The Twilight Zone, which I haven't
seen. Yeah, that's on CBS All Access, I believe.
So no one's seen it, is what you're saying.
It'll come to something eventually if you haven't seen it. Don't get me started on...
If it's good enough, it will migrate to Netflix or somewhere. Yeah,
it may be on Netflix in Europe. They tend to get a lot of the CBS All Access stuff over... Netflix just gets it in Europe, but we have to pay separately over here.
So what was your experience of Us?
This one weirded me out a bit. This was very creepy because... I mean, should I do some spoilers of what the general monster is in this?
There's no way around.
Okay, this is dealing with the doppelganger. Okay, and I know in the movie they call them the tethered. Of course, in the making of, they also call them doppelgangers too. Well, so I don't feel bad.
Yeah, and the woman who is the doppelganger for, you know, our protagonist, who is right, her name is Adelaide. And so, yeah, her doppelganger refers to herself as a shadow.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, I don't want to go too far into spoilers on that, but yeah. And the name of her doppelganger is Red. Okay. And her whole family has doppelgangers too. I mean, I think one reviewer said that it was like one actor playing both Laurie Strode and Michael Myers at the same time. I heard that referred to, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, no, I mean, a lot of doubling happening in this movie, which, you know, a lot of times when that happens, I end up annoyed, like, okay, yeah, no, I can see how you did it. And it's, you know, okay, yes, I'm very proud of you, whatever. And it's so well done and, you know, so well written and so well acted that I didn't have those thoughts of how did they film this? I think I could figure it out. It's like,
yeah. Well, it's almost on par with Jean-Claude Van Damme in Double Impact, right?
Is that the one where he did a split? Oh,
I think he does those in every movie. No, that was the one where he had a twin brother and he played himself. And never mind. Anyway, I shouldn't have brought that up here. But in this, the twins are evil. Okay,
are they?
Ah, well, that's the thing. That's the thing. That's what we want to say. But, you know, are they? Exactly. Should we start from the beginning? How does this movie start out?
In 1986, yeah?
Yes. I always forget the pre stuff. Yeah, 86. And, you know, we have a family at a carnival. I believe it's Santa Cruz, was it? Is it Santa Cruz in the beginning? Or is it somewhere else?
How important is it to get this right? Okay.
I don't know. I think anything in Jordan Peele is important. Because I don't know. I get the impression that you're like he's putting details in and you know you're supposed to look for them. Anyway, they're at a carnival. Maybe we don't know where it is. Okay. It's at a beach though, correct?
Give me a sec.
Okay. Yeah, find out.
I will give you the name of the place. Because it is the setting is of great importance here.
Are you a beach person, John?
Not really. I love the beach. Yeah, you are right. It's Santa Cruz. It's okay. Sort of boardwalk and gentle taste of Coney Island in Santa Cruz. So I kind of love the beach. I don't love swimming in the ocean. And so, you know, under the right circumstances, oh yeah, no, I love the beach. But like my wife, at any point in any time of the day, any time of year, hey, let's go to the beach. All right, let's go. And I'm like, as a Florida boy, like, okay, I'm kind of spoiled. How about you?
I hate the beach. I get dragged to it once in a while, but I don't go in the water anymore. Do you know why I don't go in the water anymore?
Jaws? No, Jaws 3.
Well, there's Jaws, yes, but no, there's also these things called jellyfish. I've been stung twice by a jellyfish in my life.
What are you doing to these jellyfish, Jeff?
I don't do anything. I don't see them in the water. The one hit me directly across the chest when I was a teenager. I'm like, I'm done. I'll do pools. I don't do the beach. I mean, I don't do the ocean. The ocean is there.
So if
things
you did a horror
in the
movie
ocean
in which you were in it, you would be taking a bath and then you would get stung by jellyfish in the bath and then you would never quite psychologically recover from that.
Probably not. No. No.
However, I doubt that movie would be good as Us. So,
yes.
So, 1986, Santa Cruz.
1986, Santa Cruz. We have a young girl named Adelaide Wilson. She is with her parents. The father keeps wanting to go on roller coasters, and no, the mom says, "Girl's too young. She can't go on it with you. I'm not going on that thing." And he's wanting to do all this cool stuff at the carnival. He's wanting to, you know, and I think he wins a prize for his daughter, and it's a Michael Jackson Thriller shirt, correct?
Yeah.
Yes.
Which is like 4 years after.
Maybe that's why it's the prize
thing.
Maybe that's why it's a prize at the carnival. Maybe there was an overabundance of shirts. I don't know.
Maybe. I mean, thematically, I think it's probably important for reasons that we might want to discuss later. But it is one of those things where, like when you watch Kubrick, like there are kind of some crazy details that just make you go, okay, like that's touching on something. Like that helps me understand the movie better. Also, it's kind of like the way James Joyce wrote Ulysses, where there's just all kinds of tricks and allusions so that there is, yeah, this rabbit hole that you can fall into. Or it might just be that this is vaguely in the 80s, and so 1986 isn't that long after Thriller and maybe we're just supposed to be a little bit hazy about 1986 since, you know, when you look at that footage, All right, if it's not for the Michael Jackson shirt, it could be 1976 and it still might kind of feel the same and might look the same or pretty similar. Yeah. The Black Flag shirts. Okay. The Black Flag shirt on the carny, that would give it away. But
okay. Yeah. So we have carnies again. Well, not
we
for
do.
Long. We have the one guy having the Jeremiah 11:11 sign when this happens after the girl goes wandering off because, you know, the mother tells the father to keep an eye on the child and he gets busy with the whack-a-mole and, of course, she leaves him. This happens.
Right. Nowadays, whack-a-mole is known mostly as a metaphor. And it's like, no, he was literally playing whack-a-mole.
Yes. Well, yes.
Which is just dumb random stimulus, right? Like he was throwing, you know, it looked like those kind of, you know, you throw softballs at these metal canisters and you're supposed to kind of knock them down. And Even though those are rigged, right? If you have skill, you can do something about it. Where whack-a-mole is just, let me just kind of have another drink. I don't even care what I'm drinking, and let me lay and look at the sky. It's kind of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's maybe you'll get a ticket for doing something, right? Redeem the ticket for a prize. No.
Yeah.
But you know, I don't. I thought it was interesting when he's at the place, and he was doing the thing with the softballs, and the guy says, "Well, you can get anything on this tier, or you can keep playing." And back in my head, I kept saying, "Don't keep playing. It's a sucker's game. Just a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush." But the daughter wants the cheaper prize anyway, which is the T-shirt. So,
and maybe because it's 4 years old, that. Yeah, is why it's a tier two prize and not a tier one or three. I forget exactly how it all worked out.
Yeah.
So she wanders off as dad is whacking a mole, and right there's a down right on the beach, so it's off the pier. And it's kind of stuck off where frankly nobody should be looking. And it's called Shaman's Vision Quest, and it says find yourself.
Yeah. Find yourself. It's, you think that's a little bit on the nose there, but I enjoyed it though. It's a little bit of humor.
Well, you might know? Find your shadow.
Yeah, exactly. So she goes in and there's the creepy owl that pops out. Okay.
Yeah. That's where the big money went. That and the lights on the outside.
Yes. Yes, exactly. It's just, well, you know, you go in there and, you know, that's it's like, oh, there was this craft place you can go to in Fort Myers. And I was there at my cousin's and there was like, pay $5 to see the dinosaurs. And I'm like, I'm not going to pay $5. These are not going to be good looking dinosaurs. That's what that. And I skipped out and they went to see it and they said it wasn't worth the $5. So, but what can you do?
That was some sort of like. Scare house in Coney Island that I went to when I was up at NYU. And it's kind of like, okay, what kind of special effects can you buy at the drugstore? Cause it seems like that was the way that they were working to build this space. So the outside more interesting than the inside until it gets properly scary when the lights go out.
I see. So like old Halloween decorations in there, that sort of thing.
I don't know. Today, just from the crap you can go to the store to buy, you could build a much better.
That's true. House. They have some impressive. I think I saw
what people have like can get for their homes. Yeah,
they can get like a Linda Blair Exorcist that's head turns around and everything. So
I remember one of the houses, one of the scare houses at Coney Island at the time had a. I'm not sure animatronic is the correct word. That was kind of a dummy. That would barf and shit itself with sound effects like every 5 or 6 seconds. And, you know, because it was in this plexiglass case, like the water just recycled. And it's like, huh, that's a peculiar thing to see right out on the street. And it was.
Yeah.
So the Vision Quest, at least it looks clean.
Yeah, it actually looks like a clean little funhouse. And. You know, things are, you know, it's, I mean, I don't know if she's age appropriate. She have to pay to get in or she just walked in. And then what happens is she runs into what looks like to be what could be a mirror, right? But she sees her back to herself,
she's
right?
She's in a mirrored room.
Yeah.
So she ran into a mirror trying to run to a lit exit when all the other lights went out. And
yeah.
So she's disoriented and ends up meeting perhaps herself. And then she really can't speak much after that. And the mom is furious with the dad. And the dad doesn't seem like he's taking much responsibility. And, if they're not divorced yet, like they seemed all but divorced when they were walking around the boardwalk.
Yeah, it don't look. They don't. I don't know. Maybe the traumatization of the daughter brought them back together.
Maybe, but that's not a maybe. Part of the movie. Yeah.
Yes, we don't really know what happens to the parents of that. We know that they're trying to get their daughter counseling. They mentioned that she should go and maybe get into the arts, so she decides to take ballet, right?
Yep.
Okay, because she's not speaking after that event.
She goes a long time without speaking, or at least, yeah, we don't see her speak as a child ever, actually.
That's true.
And it's hard to tell, like, was she just shy or was she a quiet kid? But you know, we have scenes where they're meeting with counselors and things. So it's like, no, no, like if it was a habit before, now it's, you know, a locked in feature. She just isn't talking.
Exactly.
And then we jump to present day.
And Adelaide is now an adult, and she is played by, I don't want to mispronounce her name, but I have a video where she tells us how to pronounce her name. Should I play it? okay, you know how? Okay.
Lupita Nyong'o.
Nyong'o, okay. All right, that makes sense. Okay, all right, cool.
And this is fairly irrelevant, you know, information, but, you know, I think she's just one of the most beautiful movie stars today.
Oh, definitely. I think she did do modeling when she was younger, too. I think she'd have a career. Yeah. And no, I mean, she has an amazing face. And she is married to a man named Gabe Wilson, who is played by Winston Duke. And they have two young children. We have Zora Wilson and Jason Wilson. And the younger daughter, she's more like the typical young kid that's connected now, always has the cell phone out.
She doesn't want the internet. She wants the internet. Yeah.
She wants Wi-Fi, and there's no Wi-Fi. And I do wonder sometimes too, we had that awful line about it's not the, you don't need the internet. It's the internet. But I also think that's to set up the fact that, oh, there's weak Wi-Fi here, weak communication.
Which is going to be important when crazy shit goes down. Yeah.
Yes.
It's one of those things where what would have been totally normal and natural in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and 90s, where you just have a communication blackout, and it's hard to get any, like, that is like a source of stress in so many old-time horror movies, right?
The
phone is dead. Like,
the
phone's
dead. I think in Night of the Living Dead, one of the first scenes was the zombie knocking out the phone line. Like, the zombie knew to pull out the phone line on the outside of the house. It's like... Yeah. And it's a mainstay, in fact, to the point where I'll be kind. I don't want to call it cliched, but anyway, but the point is that you know, you need that lack of communication. Okay. Or you need something else going on. Like he calls the local sheriff. Is this a prank? You know, and he doesn't take the kid seriously when like the clown is inside the house or something like that. You know, I mean, it's the usual bit. So, okay. But before the weird stuff starts happening, the husband, you know, they're at a fairly nice summer home. Was that family owned? Or, I mean, I don't think.
Were
they renting
so.
It? I don't know. Okay.
But he, it's not that nice of a summer home. Like, it's a normal summer home on a lake.
Yeah.
You know, like, it looks like it was built in the 70s. And yes. It looks like it has a lot of windows. So it's, like, a relatively modest place, but. You know, it's kind of like a slightly modern cabin.
Yeah.
And the reason why I'm saying that is because, their white friends, the Tylers, right? They have, like, that is a nice place. And
yes.
It's an important theme to the movie somehow that the Tylers are just horrible, wretched people. And
well,
their insistence on having the best of everything seems to point at a spiritual lack, even though, right, the Wilson family isn't necessarily regarded as being, you know, an ideal family either, other than they don't deliberately hurt each other. The sister a little bit, but only a little.
Yeah, I mean, what are the Wilsons? They are... Let me see. Yeah, no, I'm sorry. Excuse me. I'm getting confused with the Tylers. They are Elizabeth Moss plays Kitty Tyler. You probably know Elizabeth Moss from Mad Men if you ever watched that show.
Or The Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah, Handmaid's Tale. She was also recently in the Invisible Man remake, which I have yet to see.
I saw her on Broadway with Speed the Plow.
Oh.
David Mamet.
Oh, cool.
And The West Wing. Like, she was... President Bartlett's youngest daughter on The West Wing. So no, she's kind of Hollywood royalty at this point. Cause
yeah, no, she's been around. I mean, I've seen her.
She looks like she's about 20, but she's been in so many amazing things over so much time.
Well, she looks like she's 20. Cause apparently in the movie, she said she had work done. Remember she said, she's asking Adelaide where they're at the beach. And she's like, take a look. What do you see? And you're thinking, Adelaide's like, what do I say here? Did you have something done? You know?
But when you see her in The West Wing and you see her now, it's like, it's slight difference.
Yeah, well, I think the point was that she thinks she got some done, but Adelaide wasn't noticing a huge, huge difference. I mean,
well, it's this bizarre, horrible thing. She's having just enough work done for you to be able to not notice that she had work done. You just subtly understand that she's not aging the way other people age exactly, except when you fucking bring it up in conversation. Out the window goes the whole premise of being subtle about it. So, yeah, it's just one of those infuriating things like, why is this conversation even happening? And, yeah, you get the sense that Adelaide does not want to have that conversation at all.
No.
And also, where are they having this conversation? Where did the families first meet up in the movie?
The beach.
Which beach?
Santa Cruz.
Santa Cruz.
And is this the same beach? You notice in the beginning she does, I don't want to go to the beach. They're weird people there. We have a bay right outside our house. Let's just stay here. And of course, no, you know, Gabe's like, let's go to the beach. You know, their amusement, they're fun. You know, there's an amusement park area, you know, their son's been wanting to go on rides according to him. I don't know if that's true or not. Cause the son doesn't even want to go on the beach. I think, I don't know if either of the kids even want to go on the beach. And so it's
Jason Wilson, right? He's real squirrely and prone to anxiety and almost pointing at a place in our imaginations where he might be one of the evil people. He has a werewolf mask, right? I think it's a werewolf. It's not Chewbacca.
Yeah, I was wondering that too. I'm like, is that Chewbacca? It might just be a werewolf mask.
But it's one of those cheap plastic masks, again, from like the 70s or 80s. Yeah. That just goes over the front, right?
He found it in his grandfather's attic or something.
And he has a tendency to put that on like Michael Myers, at least in the Rob Zombie version. Where he's clearly, you know, using masks as a way to try and cope with being in the world. And it's one of those things, kind of like Get Out, although they didn't lean quite so heavily on it with Us, where I just feel so anxious watching these people interact socially that before anything seriously goes wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm already just tense watching it. And, you know, I think Get Out is the better film. I think it's the more important film.
Right.
I like Us better.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed them both with Get Out really made my skin crawl in a lot of scenes, but I can't explain it with Us. I don't know. I'm not expecting anything sinister to happen right away. I because they're at the beach, there are all these people around. I don't know. I mean, I do get kind of the same mood from both. I don't know. I don't know if that's the way he's shooting things. It's how can I put this in the words? It's like you feel something's in the background that hasn't hit anything yet, you know, but
you could feel it before you see it.
I can feel it before I see it. There's all this uncomfortable stuff with Gabe. I think I don't know if he's envious of Josh a little bit. Like, I think he goes out and buys a boat called the Crawdaddy. Because I think Josh has a much nice. I don't know if Josh. I don't know
he
if
bought
Josh has
or rented some shitty little.
Maybe he rented it.
Yeah,
the Crawdaddy. He might maybe he rented it because I don't see Adelaide being okay if he actually bought the thing. Because where are they going to put that? That can get you into trouble. I think unless maybe he asked her first. I don't know because I can see that.
No, he didn't ask her. Right? She
okay. Like, then maybe
he's got a.
Yeah, she was rolling her eyes. Jesus.
The boat is kind of like one of the minor characters of this movie.
Yeah, the Crawdaddy. And then he's telling he's all proud though. He's telling Josh about it. It's kind of like when I don't know if I saw this on like it was on the Wonder Years or some other show where like the guy next door gets a brand new car, but then the guy buys a used car, but he's still talking up like he got a brand new car, you know?
Well, when it comes to class, like owning a very modest boat still conveys some class.
Oh, yeah.
But it can't be called the Crawdad for class purposes. Two, yeah, if you're competing with Josh Tyler, who apparently earns a lot of money because he has no soul, that's what it looks like anyway. Like, yeah, you're going to end up putting those boats together. Like, we see them together in a scene.
Yeah.
Both boats, and not the characters in the boats, but both boats. And you're like, ooh, okay. Yeah, the Crawdad is in no way a good boat.
The Crawdaddy.
Yeah, the Crawdaddy, sorry.
And it's
you're very
just,
protective of that boat.
I'm protective of the boat, yeah. I mean, if I were to name my boat, why not Crawdaddy, huh?
And it's got a wonky engine, which actually kind of helps more than it hurts, ultimately.
Yeah, no, normally in horror movies you would expect that to be a hindrance, but maybe this time around it was actually... Kind of but like, we'll get to that. Yeah.
Will the chainsaw get started? Oh no! What's it? Yeah.
It depends on who's holding onto the chainsaw, though, right?
So, it's one of those things about these two movies. They remind me of so many other movies without making me remember them while I'm watching them.
Right? No,
so
I think
there are so many classic things happening, and yet it kind of feels like it's been reprocessed in such a way, and the story beats come out in such a strange way that, like, occasionally there are scenes where I'm like, oh, that felt like a normal scene. But it's, you know, the overall package and structure is so effective, but also pretty unique, I think.
Yeah, well, these movies feel fresh to me, I'll say that. I did watch some interviews with Jordan Peele. I hope that doesn't influence me, but he did make a point. There is comedy in this movie, and I did like what Jordan Peele said. Comedy helps release the tension. Audiences emotionally catch up to get ready for the next round of terror, which I think is true of most good horror movies. They do have a little bit of comedy in them.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's, you know, a scene in which, right, Josh is getting Kitty. He's refreshing Kitty's wine because she wasn't cliche enough, and...
Oh,
and then he won't give her the cup until he says, now, what do you say? And she goes, I hate you. And he goes, that'll do, or something like that.
Oh, man. Yeah, these are like people you get the feeling that I don't know that Josh is more of a gay. I don't know. Gabe's friend. I don't know. And
oh, yeah.
You know.
Well, and Kitty is like, oh, me and Adelaide are such good friends. And Adelaide's like, I don't want to be anything to do with that bitch, really.
It's, no. Well, she doesn't. She's not really into talking, she says. Remember that? She says that in the beginning. She's like.
Oh, I get yeah. And then Kitty goes, oh, I get that. And then proceeds to talk. And it's like, oh, man. Just.
Plus, Kitty's drinking wine and you're supposed to drink Coors Light at the beach, right?
Well, you know, the Tylers, they are kind of the more successfully dysfunctional version of Adelaide's own parents, right? Like the dad and the mom, clearly they are not a team. I don't know if they're married. I don't know exactly what's going on there, but they are not a team.
Yeah. And they have twin daughters though, too.
Yeah. And so the Tylers probably hate each other more than Adelaide's parents did. But they're cool with hating each other.
Yeah. Well, then that means there might be something there, right?
Maybe. Or they're just realistic. Well, we have a comfortable life. We hate each other, but what would we do with half of whatever money we have? What, we'd be ordinary middle-class people? Fuck that.
Yeah, we have a much nicer summer home. And of course, again, it's like, yes, the Wilsons, they have what might be equivalent to a cabin, but, you know, they still have a second home, I guess, right? So that's still something. But it's I almost got the feeling like it's all the keeping up with the Joneses. But the impression I got to, like a lot of the things that the Tylers are reveling in, like the stuff they have, I don't know that I'm envious of. Like the Ophelia, I guess they have the full subscription to, I guess, what would be the, I guess Ophelia is supposed to be the Alexa from Amazon, right? And like, they must have the full subscription because they can get any song they want on it, that sort of thing.
I think they just didn't feel like advertising for Amazon. So they came up with it.
Well, yeah. Oh, I understand that, but that's the standard. Yeah. And I'm just, but I mean, are you impressed with Alexa? I don't know.
Well,
maybe I'm an old timer at this point and I'm just having trouble with the new technology.
Oh yeah. No, I am so eager to own outdated technology. I had to have a new air conditioner installed last year.
Right.
And the AC guy goes, okay, so what kind of thermostat you want? I'm like, can you give me one that just has one fucking lever on it? That's what I want. Just the lever goes on the temperature I want it at. Can you give me one of those? And he goes, fuck yeah. We could do, I could do you up. Yeah. Cool. And then the AC was inspected and they're like, oh, you can't have this thermostat. You need one that's programmable. And the county won't let me have the simple, you know, and like, I almost want to bring an electrician in and go, come on, put this back, please. It's like, I'm not traveling for weeks at a time where I need to, you know, get advanced about how the AC is going to work. So yeah, I still have my iPod.
I still have my iPod as well. I have I remember the horrible story when you told me that you updated your iTunes years ago and they messed everything up. And then I was kind of smiling and I was like, I didn't do the update. Ha ha. And I didn't tell you this at the time. And then like a week later, I did it by accident. And I was like, damn it. It's like,
so I guess like, we can't find any of your files. And you're like, what?
They're right there. Same thing happened.
Right, well, we found one. Should we look for more? Okay. All right. We found two out of 200,000 files. So I guess we don't like, yeah, it's so
long. Yeah. But anyway, though,
WordPress keeps fucking up the site, presuming that just having a regular document would be good.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, and it's like they keep switching. They're like, fixed it for you. Now you have to summon a demon in order to make a paragraph. And it's like, fuck you. Like, what happened to this is about, turn?
I think I read somewhere that George R. Martin doesn't use a modern computer because he says it does autocorrect on him too many times and he has his own spellings for things. And that, so he uses like the old DOS word processing.
Well, when I would search for your photos, Jeff, for the curator of schlock, it would autocorrect and it would say, oh, did you mean shitter? I'm like, no, Schuster. What? Why is this? All right. I'm like, after like a month, I'm like, all right, learn this fucking word.
You know what Schuster is? I think it's German for cobbler. So I guess somewhere back in the day, I had an ancestor that was a cobbler.
So us.
Okay. Let's go back to us. Yes. So they're at the beach. They go back home. Okay.
Something happens at the beach.
Something happens at the beach. Oh, yes. At the beach, the youngest, the son, kind of runs off, right?
He wanders off, much like his mother did once upon a time.
And Adelaide freaks out.
And he is not that far from the Find Yourself Funhouse or whatever the hell that is.
No, I want to make a point, though. The name has changed. In fact, I wrote that down. It was changed to Merlin's Forest.
Yeah, it was a Native American earlier on, and so Merlin is less racist.
That reminds me of a short story I worked on a while ago where they had to – this guy worked at – I don't want to detract. Hold on. Unless you want me to go. Well, okay. No, basically, I was about this guy. It was a short piece. It was about this guy working at a fast food place called the Pineapple. I think it was called the Pineapple Pit. And basically, they used to have a mascot that was a horrible caricature of like a witch doctor. But then they had to get rid of it because they got complaints about it later on. But that was like their Ronald McDonald. And the idea is that it was burgers with pineapple on them. Because it was like tropical themed and it was just anyway, I don't know why that popped in my head.
Well,
enough about me.
Send me the logo when you draw it up for that one. Okay. So yeah. So, you know, the story goal, right? Like around almost at minute 9 is when she kind of meets her doppelganger.
Mm-hmm.
And then the family settles into the cabin and the dad is annoying. They go to the beach and it's like, all right, what is this movie about? And, you know, the mom has a lot of anxieties and it's just coming off as an awkward vacation until around minute 34, she delivers a speech in which she's looking at a sliding glass door or a window. And so there's this, like, we're watching her reflection The cinematography, right. I mean, in some ways it's on the nose, except when you watch it, you know, it just works.
Yeah.
It's less obvious than the find yourself with the arrow sticking into the entrance of the thing. But mm-hmm. she tells her husband, her husband's hoping to get lucky, and it's like, he does not know how to read a room, that guy.
He was in a weird position too, remember? On the bed, and he's just...
I'm wearing my Howard sweatshirt, yeah. And it's like, look at how middle class we are. And it's like, she don't care. And she tells him she's worried that this thing she saw is coming after them. And he tries to be supportive while also just poo-pooing the whole thing. And then the lights go out.
And then he's like, and then, she, you know, and then what happens right after the lights go out? The youngest son, Jason, he comes in and he's saying there is a family in the driveway.
And the dad's like, there ain't no family in the driveway. And then you look out and it's like, there's a fucking family in the driveway. Yeah.
Why does he discount that automatically? Okay. I'm go ahead.
Well, he's annoying. And one, he might still be trying to get laid. And like any other complication coming into his purview, it's like,
a one-track mind, yes.
So it's like he really doesn't want it to be true. He doesn't want his wife getting more upset, even if, you know, like their sex isn't on the menu. But yeah, it is one of those things that's really annoying, and that is like a trope, right, for horror movies. Like, oh, you kids are just goofballs. You don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, like they find the book of scary stories lying out. This is the problem, you know. This is you have an overactive imagination, blah, blah. Okay, but then they go out and they look in the driveway, and what's there?
And the dad is the dumbest one in the family.
He is. He has his moments, though. Earlier on, though, like when the son's telling the sister to kiss his anus. And he says, whoa, what, anus isn't a cuss word? I'd rather you did cuss in this situation, you know? I mean, that was – so, I mean, he's still likable, but yeah, he's – I don't know.
Well, you know, it's a fine line, and it really takes a good act. But, I mean, remember Nicolas Cage, like – and here's the thing. Like, bad Nicolas Cage would have just wrecked the color out of space.
Yes.
With some of those horrible lines, but it's just human enough, and you realize how big-hearted that character is.
Yeah.
That you kind of forgive him the corniness, even though you kind of get where the kids are coming from. But, you know, it is what a great movie will do, is it will make me care about all of the characters, not just the hero.
Exactly. So
maybe they are renting the place, right? Because one of the ways that the family gets inside the house is one of those fake rocks with the spare key underneath it, and they're like, "This is some white people crap. Why do we?"
it's probably an expensive house to rent anyway, right? I don't know.
But it seemed like it seemed like it was their stuff, wasn't it? Like,
yeah, I don't know.
The basement
maybe
had the ballet bar from when she was younger.
Oh, that's right. Never mind. Yeah.
So the other family gets inside the house, and they're all wearing these red jumpsuits and one glove, like Michael Jackson, and scissors.
Yeah, the scissors freak me out.
And it's just brilliant, you know, like out of how many ways there are to maim and hurt people in a horror movie. Just walking around with scissors, but like everybody has scissors, you're like, what is that? Why is that?
Well, it's like when you're a kid, you know, the old cliche thing, you got to hold scissors the right way or you could hurt another kid. You know, you have this image of this kid running around with the scissors the wrong way and it hits another kid in the gut, you know, so they always tell you. And, you know, I mean, do we think of scissors as a weapon? No, but could the scissors be used as a weapon? Probably. And it'd probably be a nasty one at that. And these scissors look kind of nasty.
Well, they're all metal, right? Which are harder to acquire these days.
Yeah.
And so, again, that kind of makes it just seem more classic.
Yeah.
Like the furniture in the cabin isn't grotesque, but it all looks like the fashion of maybe the late 70s.
Yeah. I mean, it could be. I mean, are we talking about the jumpsuits?
Oh, no. Well, the jumpsuits, you know, like
they're red too.
That really hasn't changed since what, the 40s, 50s. But no, I'm talking about like the wicker furniture and the
lamps and
the sort of gauzy curtains around the whole house.
Yeah, that seems to be a thing. Like in The Strangers, the house was a 70s ranch house in that too, even though it took place in the modern day. And I wonder if that's directors trying to do callbacks to, you know, liking the 70s period of horror, but not actually setting it in the 70s.
Well, all you have to do is curate really well. And yeah, like you can have your cake and eat it too. It looks like the 70s. It doesn't have to work like the 70s.
Exactly. Red jumpsuits scare me, though, because I always wonder why they're wearing the red. Is it because there's a lot of bleeding where these people come from, and easier to wash, easier if they get, so the outfits get stained?
Maybe. Red pops.
Yeah.
You know, I think of Mystery Science Theater when I think of red jumpsuits, even though I think those, like another color you sometimes wore as well. But so, all right, we had the scene where Adelaide is giving the speech about how she's worried the this alternate version of her is going to come get her, and then the lights go out, and then this creepy family infiltrates the house, captures the whole family, and then there is a conversation in the living room where the dad demonstrates more than once he does not get what's going on at all, where the little boy, they're like, what's going on? Who are these people? And the little boy just goes, oh, they're us.
Yeah, Gabe is not in good shape at this point, too, is he?
He got his knee banged up pretty bad.
Yeah, and what I liked about this is usually in a lot of movies, you know, you get your knee banged up and the person's good to go. You know, like Jean-Claude Van Damme can get his kidney out and be up and running about in 2-3 hours. You know? But, you know, in real life, no, you get your knee banged up, you're out of, you're hurt for a while, you know?
Yeah, he hobbles through the rest of the movie. Yeah.
Yes.
It's not like, oh, yeah, no, my, you know, fibula got cracked, but it got better. Like, no.
No.
My kneecap is busted, but, you know, whatever. You don't need your kneecap to work. Actually, you do need your kneecap to work.
And I believe it gets busted by his opposite, right?
Yeah.
The one that's known as Abraham, I think, in the...
Yeah.
When I looked it up online.
And what's really freaky about, you know, this doppelganger family is just they're so primal,
mm-hmm.
right? Pluto, the little boy, ends up snorting and grunting and he's crawling. And before we have a good sense of what this family looks like, we see Pluto just climb up a tree like it's nothing. And you're just like, oh, shit. Like, all right.
Well, it's weird that Jason,
this family has a chance.
Jason wears the animal mask, but his opposite almost sort of acts animal-like in his gestures.
Yeah, and he has a scarier mask that looks like the mask that, what's his name, wore in Nightbreed.
The doctor, hold on.
The doctor played by
David Cronenberg.
Yeah.
I remember what his name was. Anyway, but I think the creepiest one was the daughter's opposite, though, in some ways. The I think her name was Umbre, if I'm saying that right. So Zora's opposite was Umbre. And not much was done with her, but just her all their expressions on their eyes. I think that they said that they were trying to make them look like they hadn't seen the sun in a while and what that might do to someone, you know, if you were, you know.
Well, and there's the sense that, like, they can't speak and they are... trying to express themselves, and there's the sense that they are partly intelligent, even though they can't speak. But there's also this weird sense where they are either like these snarling wildebeest people, or they're not thinking anything at all. They're just statues.
Yeah.
With the exception of Red, which is a pretty big exception.
Well, the creepiest thing... Well, the creepiest thing, I don't even think they say anything for a little while, do they? And I'm wondering, what are their plans for this other family?
Well, Abraham, right, Gabe's doppelganger, like, yells and makes noises. And
doesn't look like he has much of a sense of humor.
No, Abraham's wound up pretty fucking tight, I would have to say.
Yes. And so they're... Okay. But then... Red does speak at some point.
But yeah, no. As I recall. They gather the family in one room, and then
they're all sitting on the couch.
Red starts to speak, and she sounds like maybe she's never used her voice before.
Very hollow sounding.
Well, hollow, but also it just looks like her vocal cords like haven't been used. Like, you know, she goes, pardon? You know,
like she's straining for the words to come out. And I'm trying to listen to what she's saying, and she's going on this horrible thing
that's
about
the perfect way to describe it is just the strain of getting the sounds out.
And you're trying to hear what she's saying because she's telling this nightmarish story about two little girls, right?
Yep.
And, you know, one got toys that were soft and cuddly, and the other, I'm probably butchering this, and the other got toys that were sharp and cut into her and stuff like that. And I'm thinking this sounds fairly horrifying. And I'm wondering, is this a parable or is she being literal with all this?
Well, there is that caption, right? The superimposed beginning where we are warned that there are thousands of miles of underground layers in this country. Some of them abandoned mines, some of them abandoned subways. So, you know, we are kind of told, oh, there's this whole underground. And so we do get a sense like, oh, all right. So these people all represent an alternate version of whatever's happening above ground.
Now, I do think it interesting because she asks her who they are, and they say, we are Americans. Which
it's one of the best lines in any movie ever.
I guess at that point, it might be a mistake to ask to see their social security card, right?
So when she says, we are Americans, or we are Americans, you know, I think it helped me draw the conclusion that this is kind of an allegory of race in America.
Yeah, well, these are people that they've never seen before.
Well, they have when they look in the mirror. They just haven't seen this particularly twisted version of themselves before.
Right.
And this kind of goes back to Jeremiah 11:11. And of course, the 11:11 kind of, it's like, oh, you're double 11s. And it's like so much doubling going on in this movie. But that passage is about...
I can read it to you if you'd like.
Go ahead.
This is from the King James Version of the Bible. Therefore, thus saith the Lord, behold, I will bring evil upon them, which they shall not be able to escape. And though they shall cry unto me, I will not hearken unto them. Is that right?
One group gets privileged, the chosen people, and the others, the opposite.
And this, of course, everyone I talk to about this movie, they're always like, I left this movie with lots of questions, like, who are they, you know? And then, of course, the response would be, they are us. And they do make a little bit of mention who they are. They say that they are, that the government was using them to control the people on the surface above.
And why isn't QAnon talking about this?
I don't know. I was about to say, you know, it's like the quote at the beginning, are there really thousands of miles of tunnels? And then, of course, oh, it turns out there are. Okay. So that's kind of unnerving now that I'm learning about that. Not in Florida, I would hope. So maybe we'd be safe down here.
I have actually been in a basement in Florida.
Okay.
But you have to stoop a lot to be
I
in
see.
It. Yeah. Not many basements. Water line's pretty high up here. And in what, 30, 40 years, it'll be even higher. Like,
yeah, that's what they say.
Where we're living now. But
yes,
but this movie isn't an allegory about that. But there is this sense like, okay, right. The Wilson family, they can't keep up with the Tyler family. And there's all of this sort of trauma that Adelaide is trying to solve, but it really seems like it's really affecting her son Jason, that he seems to be experiencing similar trauma to her. He certainly seems as freaked out by things as she is.
More sensitive, I think. That might be the term I would to what's going on, I think.
Sensitive to the point of not always being able to cope.
Yeah. He's rather introverted. He has these magic tricks that he keeps talking about, but I don't know if we ever see it. The magic trick is.
I think it comes up like a lot later in the movie.
Right. Well, no, I meant in the beginning, though. That's what I was thinking.
Oh, yeah, no, that was like one of his things is, oh, I got this magic trick that won't work. And it's like, but keep watching. Yes. It's like, oh, God. The only thing, you know, the only upside to watching a magic trick that works is when it works, it's over.
Oh, not a fan of, I had a speech class in college and we had to do a demonstration report. And I did one based on magic tricks.
Of course tricks. You did.
Everyone else was doing cooking demonstrations. I want to do something different. Anyway, okay.
You took the Ricky Jay path. Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it was anyway.
So there's a conflict right after this meeting. Oh, yeah. And so as we were sort of mentioning, Gabe keeps going, look, all right, we can go to an ATM. I can get you money. And it's like, and the daughter's like, this has nothing to do with money. This is like,
yes. That's like, that almost reminded me of that uncomfortable scene in the Zodiac where the guy says, just the wallets are in the back of our pocket and he doesn't want the money. Okay. And you can tell, I mean, just look at the difference between Red and Adelaide, just their expressions on their face. I mean,
or that they have the same face. Like, okay, maybe, yeah, this is so fucked up. This is not, they're not here to steal our shit. Or maybe they are, but that's the least of it. At around the 1 hour mark, I think, right, Adelaide asks her doppelganger Red, like, what do you want? And what we get is the most disturbing answer. We want to take our time.
Like, and doesn't she?
That's not the clear answer I wanted, but I was trying to wrap some crazy shit up here. So apparently that's not happening. Oh, man.
Now, would you suggest that envy is a theme in this movie? That the tethered are angry at the people on the surface?
Well, shouldn't they be?
But the people on the surface have no idea that the tethered even exist.
Well, that's how white privilege works.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying it was the government, though. The government's fault.
Well.
But you'll notice in an earlier scene how Zora is trying to say they're putting fluoride in the water and like the parents don't care. So are you saying people ignore what the government does because they're comfortable doing so?
Unless you're from Flint. Yeah. Like, okay. So I said something that maybe doesn't seem to make sense on the face of it, which is like white privilege means you don't have to think about the suffering of others, even though
right.
we're talking about the Wilsons and they are a black family.
Right.
You know, vaguely well-adjusted, but, you know, it seemed like they have good hearts and, you know, they seem like a good family and they're wealthy enough to own this, you know, summer home. But compared to what people underground had to deal with, like, all right, oh man, I have to listen to Kitty Tyler talk about the work she had done that's so subtle that we can't tell. Like, that counts as a trial for a middle-class person who isn't really dealing with, you know, real serious issues day in, day out. Whereas, you know, to be one of those shadows, you're literally living in a nightmare world where your very actions are determined by the actions of the people above ground, except when they happen underground, they don't necessarily have any meaning, right? The people underground, they are puppets. They do not have agency except for Red.
Yeah. You know, it almost makes me too think of how, you know, all these fancy devices are used in the movie. They're made kind of in factories in bad conditions in other parts of the world. I mean, I don't know. Yep. That just popped in my head too. I'm thinking there's that too. It could be first world versus third world too.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, one of the great things I think about this allegory is because it's a black family and, you know, they are sort of compared and contrasted with the Tylers, this upscale white family, that we have sort of that to think about. But the Tylers also have their own shadows. And it turns out just about everybody has their own shadow on this horrible nightmare night in which all the shadows come out to hold hands across America after they kill everybody. or maybe in the middle of killing everybody, but reenacting this weird thing from 1986. I presume that's why that's the year, is because...
That's the Hands Across America. That's right. America. Yes, I remember that. That was, I remember seeing that on TV. I guess you and I are both old enough to remember those halcyon days, right?
I had better shit to do. You know, what could have been a simple racial, you know, allegory gets complicated and deconstructed while this movie progresses, so that the simple, oh, this is about slavery or whatever, like it's so complicated that like it doesn't have a very simple breakdown of like, okay, but what exactly is being critiqued here? So I think there are all these touchstones.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we could probably think of Thriller as Michael Jackson's coming into his own as a man and feeling like he had to have these different personas in order to make himself beloved and acceptable. Whereas when he was the youngest member of the Jackson 5, he was just adorable and everybody loved him and it could be simple.
Mm.
And then as an adult, it's like, okay, am I a monster for just being me? And I think Michael Jackson and, you know, the people who created Thriller were definitely playing with a lot of those concerns in such a bold spectacle horror way that we could watch that and like the biggest record of all time, probably the most popular video of all time. And
oh, yeah, I saw it when I was a kid. I freaked out because it was on in the middle of the day.
Yeah, it was John Landis and Rick Baker, and yeah, just like a monster team. And because of the high production values and because of the music, we could kind of forget. I'm not sure the Mormons forgot, but most of us could forget that there might be a racial component to this story of Thriller. And so, you know, Get Out, clearly that's a racial thriller in which race is, or at least, you know, racism and American history is definitely being touched upon. But in Us, I think we can feel it, but we can't, it's not a simple equation as the movie goes forward.
No, I mean, I think there's a lot to think about here. I mean, what do we think of the doppelgangers of the Tylers versus the Wilsons? Are they worse? Are their doppelgangers even worse?
Well, you know, Elizabeth Moss is so good in this movie. Mm-hmm. In part, she's just horrible as Kitty Tyler. And it's like, it's hard to imagine her just being a bitch. Mm-hmm. And don't get me wrong, she played Kitty Tyler as kind of a likable bitch. Like, as long as I don't have to spend 4 hours with her, like, it's fine. Mm-hmm. But as the doppelganger, as the shadow, it was so creepy. And you just see her struggling to have human emotions. So as her husband is getting killed by Gabe on the boat, it looks like she's screaming and then she's laughing and she's just making these sort of rasping noises. And it's like, you could tell that there's hysteria there. And it's also, it's just hard to tell exactly what that character was experiencing other than just the chaos of having emotions at all, of being untethered, right?
Hmm.
Once Kitty's dead, Dahlia, you know, other
Dahlia
has freedom and she could do whatever she wants.
Yeah, because you noticed when they do show scenes in underground, they are always having to do the reverse. I mean, they do the exact thing that the person on the surface does. Like sometimes they actually have to mimic the actions.
Right. And there's a long, long hallway in almost all of those scenes. So it just doesn't seem plausible. But you cut before it gets too ridiculous.
Well, I get the point. They don't have to do it all the time, but it's like sometimes you get caught up in it and they don't want to be caught up in it and they do. And I guess that might be annoying. Like if you're not wanting to jog at that moment and the person above is jogging, you got to go for a jog.
Yeah. Yeah. So Dahlia, right. I mean, she's not the top villain, monster, whatever.
No.
But she's pretty fucking scary. As she kind of terrorizes Adelaide.
Yeah.
And family. And herself.
Yeah. And there's even the scene where the opposite, Josh's opposite's name is Tex.
Yep.
I don't know why I'm laughing at that anyway, but like he almost looks like he's reaching down to help her up and then he just slicks his hair back like a psych, you know, which is kind of nasty.
Well, I think I just figured this out. So Dahlia takes her scissors and starts cutting up her own face, probably where the plastic surgeon fixed Kitty.
Oh, like maybe I want to keep my old face.
Yeah. Except I didn't she's get not really a plastic surgeon, and you're not supposed to use scissors if you're going to... I don't know how you undo plastic surgery.
I don't know
either. It was fucking frightening.
So do you see parallels between this and Get Out? I don't know if how much you want to talk about Get Out, but because I know you said that was... You were getting curbed your enthusiasm, uncomfortableness while watching that movie.
Yeah. Well, it's a long setup, right? For Get Out. I mean, a long setup for both these stories. And so I think it just requires a lot of brilliance from the storyteller and patience from the viewer. And I think that Us requires more active mental participation from its audience. If you just watch it going, okay, just what is the movie? I'm going to be half asleep and talking with my friend. You won't get this movie, right? You got to watch this movie. Where Get Out, you could watch it a little bit more casually, except it's so dramatically fraught that it's like, I just felt such agita. It took me a couple of days to watch Get Out, even though like I recognize its brilliance. And you realize, you know, like, okay, there's something very wrong with this whole situation, but I don't know what it is yet.
Well, the one thing that kept on my mind, too, is that they called the police and the police aren't showing up. And it's way past the 15 minutes away they said they were. And, of course, as we move on in the movie, we realize no one's coming to save anybody because everyone's getting hit.
And us. Yeah, the police probably
have their doppelgangers. And us, yeah. Yes. Oh, Lord. It's a disaster. Even the Jeremiah 1111 guy had his doppelganger, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Which surprised me he was still out there. 20, 30 years later, it's
he was committed. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. What are the significance of the rabbits?
Well, rabbits have traditionally been used for laboratory experiments. Mm-hmm. They are more complicated than rats, and yet they are easy to breed. Insert joke here. And I think the white rabbits, like, okay, you go underground, there's the white rabbits, but you see all of these sort of this grid of rabbit cages. So the rabbits, you know, we're told, okay, you know, right. Red tells us, oh yeah, when you got to eat a good meal, we had to eat raw rabbit. So there's like a technical story point there, but also whatever government program this was to have a duplicate population underground, they are treating humanity, or at least this giant group of humanity, as if they are no more significant than laboratory rabbits. And I'm not saying I approve of laboratory rabbits, but we are meant to, I think, draw that analogy as well.
Right.
But you can't think too hard about these analogies because the movie is still moving along and people are getting killed and maimed. And
I know that Gabe, they're in the house. They said, why don't we just fortify this house? Right. I guess like in Night of Living Dead, let's put the barriers up and we'll be safe.
Let's play
it's a
defense.
Nice place. We got food. Let's play defense. And Adelaide says, no, we have to get on the run. And her point is that since we were friends with the Tylers, our doppelgangers know we're the friends and they're going to know to come here to look for us.
Yeah. And they make an attempt to save the Tylers.
Yeah.
To warn them. It's like, too late.
No, it's too late. Well, because the Tylers had their own doppelgangers to deal with. I don't know. Also, I'm also wondering, too, are the doppelgangers supposed to represent our dark sides, our shadow, as you will? I don't want to start talking about Yun because I'll show how much I don't know. But, you know, what would evil... actually, we don't want to call them evil. It's the shadow. So.
Well, there is a giant plot twist at the very end that I think we should say. It's brilliant and interesting, but I think that plot twist is meant to really make us think about the doppelgangers. Like, okay, they're all homicidal, apparently, but they have a point of view that seems legitimate, even if it would be really nice if they wouldn't murder people.
I mean, they're probably dealing with a lifetime of built up rage because they must know about the surface world. Do they have the memories of the people in the surface above? I don't know. It's
a little unclear how they experienced, but also it seems like Red had more information,
right,
and ability.
Right.
And there's some reason why she had maybe more ability to communicate and
exactly
figure stuff out. And we'll just save that for viewers who haven't seen the movie yet and went ahead and listened to this anyway, which that was wrong, but still
we won't say the last thing. Yeah, we won't say the last thing.
So I think the closest thing we have to a character goal might be at the, you know, it's when she gives that speech to her husband and she kind of decides, oh, I got to get out of here. This is not a good place to be. And that's when, you know, she can't get out. And so this is all because of the torment of what happened, you know, at that funhouse. So, right, the vision quest, the shaman's vision quest. So based on that, Jeff, how does the movie have to end?
We have to go back to the beginning.
Yeah. Okay. So Adelaide has to. Like, she wanted to run away, and it's like, okay, now I got to go.
And it is the same place because it has the same stupid owl that pops out.
Yeah, different theme on the outside, same shit on the inside. Mm-hmm. And it turns out, yeah, and there's this giant, like, escalator. And occasionally, I've been on a subway where I've seen, you know, escalators that are just inhumanly big, and you're like, oh man, I don't want to know that I'm that far underground. And so, yeah, she has to face off against Red, and this movie has speeches, right? I mean, this is, it's kind of like, I know Batman usually doesn't give speeches, but his villains tend to monologue a bit, and
yeah,
there are three speeches, right? There's Adelaide's to her husband, and then Red has basically two monologues.
Right.
And so, for a movie that just feels like a movie, it's really psychologically rich and funky and ending the way that you could have predicted it would end, except you kind of don't think about that because there's so much shit going on.
Yeah, I mean, well, it ends with the, like I said, as you said earlier, with the hands. I mean, it's almost like a Birds style ending, you know, with Hitchcock's The Birds, when you notice this isn't just happening in this part of Santa Cruz, this is all over the country.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's all over the world. I would hope not, but
yeah, it's hard.
Or maybe this isn't.
It's hard to see how that would work, right? Like, first of all, it wasn't Hands Across the World, but also, yes! Does the U.S. government have underground layers everywhere in the world?
Yeah, this is an American. This is a proud American project.
Like, I just don't see how it. Yeah. Well, David Sedaris talking about Santa Claus, and he's like, yeah, you just, some of the details you just need to think about, not too much. That's really the key to even being able to grapple on to the story.
Like, how does he get down the chimney?
But I have watched this movie twice now, and it got better the second time, but also, you know, for a smart movie, it watches just like a movie.
Well, that's a good thing, as opposed to watching like what? Explosions every 5 minutes?
I'm not a big fan of that either. I'm more like explosions every 20 minutes myself.
Yes.
No, it's just, you know, I almost feel like I should have watched this five more times to figure out, to crack the structure, right? Like, I'm still not fully seeing the structure other than it has this slow build and also this ambiguity we're supposed to feel both about our heroes and our antagonists.
Yeah, I mean, do you feel bad for the antagonist is a better term. Do we feel bad for the antagonist in this movie?
I mean, when one of them dies, it's clearly depicted as necessary, but also tragic.
Yeah, I'm trying to think too. I don't know if there, would you like a sequel to this movie?
No, God no.
Okay.
Oh, I was thinking of 28 Days Later? And then 28 Weeks Later.
No. I didn't care for 28 Weeks Later.
Oh, why?
No, I wanted to like it too. And no, I didn't.
But the way that movie ends is you see the zombies, like, apparently they got through the tunnel, and it's like they arrive in Paris, and I'm like, at the end, and it's like, hey, this is what part three would be about, and like, I guess they didn't earn enough money to make a third one.
28 months later, would that be what the
maybe
would have been?
Yeah.
Would you like an Us prequel? Would you want? Do you want to know more about what was going on underground, or do you think that doesn't matter?
I think it's kind of like when George Lucas goes, "Oh, I'll make the story better for you guys." See, there are these things called Miraclidians, and you're like, "No, make it stop." Like, there's a spiritual and psychological element to this, which, if you try and quantify it, is like, I think that Jordan Peele has done an amazing job at creating enough mystery while creating enough stability for that mystery to exist in, for the story to, you know, really resonate in wonderful ways. So, yeah, no, it's kind of a perfect horror movie, you know, and I care about all the characters. I mean, it's kind of how I felt about John Carpenter's The Thing and those two dudes at the end, and just like, all right, we're going to die out here. One of us might be the creature.
Well, apparently they're going to be remaking The Thing.
Of course they are.
It's going to be done by Blumhouse. I don't know. Maybe if they got the right director, but maybe. I don't know.
You know, there was such a clamoring appreciation for that The Thing prequel. Oh, that's right. Nobody gave a fuck. Why are they remaking the movie? How about you just re-release the old one in movies? Like, clean it up, give us like a better sound. Fuck. You'll get my $10.
I wanted to like it, and I think they wanted to use the practical effects like in the first one, and then the studio came in and said, CG. And they said, no, we wanted to match the Carpenter movie, CG, and I think they couldn't use it, so.
It's like, okay, so what you want to do is spend five times as much money on the effects as we could with CG, plus you want it to take a lot longer for a prequel.
That could be what you loved about Us, and maybe even get there aren't copious amounts of CG in this movie.
If there is, it's hard to see where. I wouldn't be surprised if there's computer trickery with the doubling. But, and the actors, oh my God, like, normally when people do the doubling thing, it's like, okay, now we're the over-the-shoulder shot where they had a double, or they're doing some sort of composite with a blue screen or a green screen. And it's like, you know, it's so well done. And the acting is just so perfect that, yeah. Like, I had one thought about, oh, I see how they did that shot. But I'm not, you know, in a horror movie where I'm not completely invested in the story, it's more like, wow, I wonder if that actress will take her top off. I'm kind of going back to when I was 14 or 13 watching a horror movie, right?
Joe Bob Briggs.
Counting the breasts and how many heads roll at the end. But just thinking like, oh, I think I know that actor. What other movies has that person done? Like, these distracting thoughts that aren't about the movie itself. And no, I think, you know, you've mentioned Hitchcock. I think Jordan Peele might be Hitchcock's equal, you know? Like, if this is what a normal movie from him is going to be like, if it's Get Out and this, like, okay, all right, keep making them. I'll happily keep watching them. I feel like a dick that I've held out this long, but everyone's like, oh my God, Get Out is the best movie. And I'm like, all right,
whenever people say that, I have the reaction not to. If something's overhyped, then I was worried that it wasn't going to live up to the hype. Do you understand?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure it was the same way when Scream came out, but I'd actually seen that close to opening. So but I imagine people hadn't seen that. It was probably people were acting like it was the greatest thing ever made. Remember? And
yep. Yep. And you know, Get Out is just an impeccable movie. And you know, it was more directly about racism. And
yeah,
partly when I see movies like that, partly I get too angry. I mean, I'm anxious just watching how much discomfort there is, but watching some of those scenes, you know, like, I got too emotional, and I'm like, and it delivered, you know, like, it delivered a good horror movie with a premise that got me really worked up. Unlike the movie Up, another one word movie, Up, fuck Up.
The Pixar movie.
You're
bringing up Up and we're talking about Us. You didn't cry at the beginning with the. No, I'm sorry.
Yeah. I cried.
Oh, okay. That's what I was about to say.
My dad died, and I cried. And I fucking bawled. And I was emotionally exhausted after 10 minutes. And then it's this zany old man movie. So when he and the other old guy are like old man fighting, like nothing that happens after the first 10 minutes and up matters much. Fuck that movie.
But it was,
fuck that movie, Jeff. Okay.
It's okay. You can have that opinion. It's all right.
And okay. So Get Out wasn't quite as personal for me, but the racial tension of that movie. And I realized like that's probably what I'm supposed to feel.
I don't think it was.
It was a really good movie. Like it, unlike Up, it got me really riled up and then it delivered and carried me someplace worth going. Yep. And I love Pixar, right? Like I'm a Disney guy and I realized like, okay, yeah, I may be one of the few people who have compared Get Out and Up as, you know, movies.
Maybe Jordan Peele should make a Disney movie.
He should definitely make a Disney movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I would watch it. Yeah. So my problem isn't the first 10 minutes of Up. It's everything that happens after. And one of the freaky things about Get Out is just how many white actors I respected playing people who filled my heart with hate.
They're all awful. I recognize some of the actors too. You had Catherine Keener. You had the one kid who played the son. He was he played like a hillbilly kid in The Last Exorcism. Yeah, and
he was he played a shitbag drug addict in Twin Peaks: The Return.
Yeah, I mean, he gets around. He
Bradley
plays
Whitford, who also is a West Wing alum, right? Allison Williams, who, despite being on Girls, I liked a lot. And the movie hinges on the performance of Stephen Root, playing a blind man for at least the second time in his career. Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou would be the first, I think.
Right.
But his character is going forward with evil, and we kind of know why, and Chris Washington, the protagonist of the story, gets to ask him, is like, but why is it us that you're doing this to? And I realize I'm completely infuriating anyone who hasn't seen Get Out because I'm not giving a plot summary. But he goes, why is this happening? Why does it have to happen to us? And Stephen Root just goes, I don't know. It's just the way they work it. But I need your sacrifice to live the life I want to live. And we have a sense of why he wants to do that. And there's some fleck of nobility in that, even though fuck that guy.
You know what I almost thought of? And this is a weird analogy, but it almost kind of reminds me of that's almost like a vampire. You know, a vampire will take the life out of somebody to stay immortal, their own ends.
Yep.
Maybe I'm reaching there. I don't know. But that just popped in my head.
No, this is kind of like a science fiction workaround for how could a vampire stick around?
Yeah. And I would argue, would you argue Us is also more of a science-based horror movie than supernatural, because, or at least paranormal, because Jordan Peele said both. I mean, he said it's, which I thought was odd, because I don't know where the paranormal factors into Us at all. But I did notice they were saying some things earlier, like the Elizabeth Moss character, Kitty, she makes a point like, oh, so many coincidences lately. And now I'm wondering if those are coincidences or something was up with that. But
yeah, I think if there is a supernatural element, I think it's just that the science fiction is so vague.
Right.
That it might as well be supernatural. And this wouldn't work as a book. We see it visually and it makes the cinematic sense while you watch Us. It all makes cinematic sense. And you can ask some questions and, you know, like some plot holes start to appear. But it's a great yarn. It's a great story. And, you know, most of us can forgive some plot holes, you know, if we're watching a good story. Like, I don't hate The Little Mermaid, even though if she could sign her name, she could write a note to Erica going, hey, I'm that girl who saved your life. I never hate the movie just because, you know, like there should have been a solution. And then you could go, well, there was a codicil on the contract farther down where she promises she's not going to write either. Like,
Maybe is Ariel writing in the language of the mermaids, which is completely different from.
Doesn't look like it. No.
Where did, okay, because I'm trying to think, well, where does Eric come from now that I'm thinking about it? Okay. Well,
that reminds me of the sort of crazy ass Exorcist music with like the Latin in it, or if it sounds like Latin.
Oh, in the beginning? Yeah. I'm like, well, this doesn't sound good. Whenever you hear music like that, that's not good. That reminds me, you know what? I'm not even sorry, but like The Omen has stuff like that. The Amityville Horror with that horrible, la, la, you know, I don't want to sing that.
I barely remember.
Okay.
That has Josh Brolin's dad, right?
Yes, James Brolin's in it. It was...
He's so handsome, that guy.
What?
He's so handsome, that guy.
No, he was good in it, too, but he made a point that he couldn't work for a year after that movie. Though I hope that there's not as much of a stigma on horror as there once was. I hope the actors in this we see them elsewhere as well, you know. But James Brolin said he kind of couldn't find work, I guess because his performance was too intense. This is a better movie than the Amityville Horror.
That's the shitty thing about making the Amityville Horror and then no one wants to hire you because you seem like too much of a creep to spend any time with.
But that's probably faint praise. Yeah,
you did it in order to make the Amityville Horror.
Yeah, well.
which Stephen King said he wrote a nasty review of it, and then he saw it again with a different audience, and he felt a lot differently. And then he just saw, oh, no, this is the real estate horror. Oh, my God. Like, we buy a house, and then it ruins our life.
Yeah. Well, in this isn't real estate horror. This is you have a good life and your evil selves are coming to get revenge on you for it. Maybe not. Maybe I'm completely missing them.
No.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just fascinated that, you know, I mean, it could be that the hero goal, the story goal for each of these movies for Get Out and Us is, well, it's right there in the title of Get Out. I want to get out.
Get Out.
Which actually was a Eddie Murphy joke about the Amityville Horror.
Yes.
White people go into a house and they see blood in the toilet and a demon says, get out. And they're like, hey, baby, I think we should stay. We should buy this house. Like,
oh, I don't know that. I might have mentioned this on another podcast about the giant swath of blood leading to the basement in one of the Italian horror movies. But like in the Italian horror movie, they see the giant swath of blood going to the basement and the family says, let's go to bed. And the babysitter's missing that they hire for the night and they just ignore it. Whereas like in a typical American horror movie, it would just be, oh, they'd hear get out and they say, well, let's stick it out a little longer. See if the situation improves, you know? And then there's black blood boiling up from the basement and, you know, the pig ghost shows up in the window for some reason.
The pig ghost.
Which wasn't explained. The pig ghost. Because there was the daughter saw the pig apparition in the book. I read the book, The Amityville Horror. It shows up in the window in the, never mind. Okay. Because they figure the audience read the book and they wanted that little, never mind.
All right. So what do you think about Us?
I'm meandering. I was shocked, actually. I was very creeped out as soon as the tethered show up. And I'm like, I honestly, this is one of the, I was trying to figure out what was going to happen next. And I couldn't because I'm like, well, what do you do when it's yourself when it isn't yourself, you know? Or is it yourself? I mean, it's just, I don't know. It messed around with me.
Yeah.
I mean, do we all have a tethered out there?
God, I hope not.
Do you think there's a...
Wow.
What would your tethered be like, John King?
I would hope that I am the tethered one. Jesus, look at my life. if I have some underground tether, you know, that poor bastard has a worse liver than I do, is my best guess.
I'm trying to think. You would be a radio...
Oh, he would just be mumbling into a comb in a dirty cinder block corner filled with piss is probably what you would be doing.
Yeah. Well, on that note, any final
and
then thoughts?
Red would walk over and she goes, I have a plan.
I am interested to see what Jordan Peele has in store for us next. And I do hope he uses, I don't know. Think he'll go with different actors next time around, or is this going to be like a cast thing like we see with American Horror Story where you use the same cast of actors over and over again? I don't think we had any repeats from Get Out in this, so I'm trying to think.
No, he didn't.
I think Lupita was also in Black Panther, I think, right? Maybe not. I don't remember.
Well, she won an Oscar for 12 Years a Slave?
Yeah.
As a supporting actor. All right, so let's see. You're asking too many questions at the same time, Jeff. So let's.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, she was in Black Panther.
Yeah, I remember now.
Rest in peace, Chadwick Boseman.
I was shocked by the news over the weekend. I did not.
Way too fucking young.
I know. That's my age, so that's.
But it would make sense that, you know, when you make two movies this good, you don't want the third one to sound like a retread of the first two.
Yeah, and he did. I think he purposely did not want, he didn't want to do a repeat of what he did the first time around. I mean, you can still see his signature on both movies, I think.
Oh, yeah, no, he's a, you know, he seems like a great auteur.
Did you notice the son was wearing a Jaws shirt at the beach?
I remember noticing it at some point, I think in the car.
Yeah.
But yeah, that would be a good thing to wear at the beach if you're an asshole. Or a confused.
Or maybe it's just one of Jordan Peele's favorite horror movies, too. That could just be a reference.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, in some ways, it's a trick to make a movie look a little bit older, a little old fashioned without it, you know, actually having to be stuck as an old fashioned thing.
Right. I mean, to be fair, nowadays, that would probably be a retro 80s thing. Because all the kids are wearing stuff, you know, because of Stranger Things. They're all wearing 80s material now. Have you noticed that?
No, but, you know, I stay in bed as much as I can. Well, that is the show for this week. I would like to thank Scribophile, Jeff Schuster, and Alexander Pate. So those of you who are about to begin Christmas shopping or the like, if you are using Amazon, you could do this show a great big favor and click on the Amazon affiliate link on the left-hand side of thedrunkenodyssey.com, and that will give The Drunken Odyssey a slight commission on whatever it is that you purchase with no expense going towards yourself. Maybe the U.S. government should think about doing that. Anyway, don't forget to check out thedrunkenodyssey.com throughout the week for all kinds of great written content, including Drew Barth's Comics Are Trying to Break Your Heart, and Jeff Schuster is the curator of Schlock. If you've not yet left a review for this podcast over at Apple Podcasts or wherever it is that you stream this, please do so, as it helps spread the word and helps keep this show going. And maybe think about buying my amazing novel, Guy Psycho and the Ziggurat of Shame. All right, gang. Until next week, put your ass in the chair, keep attacking those keys, and don't swallow the worm.
Dear listeners, writers, and fellow Odysseans, send your questions, observations, complaints, manifestos, transcriptions of Turkish opera, and whatever else you got to thedrunkenodyssey@gmail.com.
A while back, John King endowed the Museum of Schlock and tasked me, Jeff Schuster, with curating the bugger. Each week, I curate one more entry into this proud genre of film. I think... Truth is, I'm really not sure what schlock is, but my writing about it is sublime. Read it every Friday at thedrunkenodyssey.com.
Thank you for listening to The Drunken Odyssey with John King, a podcast about the writing life. This is your announcer, Lauren Butler. Do 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 do.